The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
We are living in a culture where I don't have my phone, my wife has it, but literally a friend of mine says, you know, do you give your son a phone and he's carrying a strip club around in his pocket is basically what that is. The accessibility, the affordability, the availability, we'll talk about that in a few minutes, is unheard of in history. You know, you used to have to go to a seedy, like, underground place to get access to this stuff, or in a paper bag, you know, hide it in the magazines you buy at the corner store where you hide there. But it is so affordable, so accessible, and it's unbelievable how accessible this is. We all know that. But our sons need a way to navigate this. And who has God equipped to talk to our sons about this? Us. Mom and Dad. Even if you don't feel equipped. I said this in one of my talks yesterday. God has given you your children. He didn't give them to anyone else. And he has given you what you need to go over these conversations with your children. Even if you're scared, even if it's awkward, even if it's uncomfortable, that's okay. You'll get through it, but you've got to talk about this with your kids. In one of these books, he says, if you haven't started talking about it, you're probably too late. And the average age, well, we'll talk about the average age here in a second. I want to read... The enemy has strategies that he is trying to use to destroy our families. And some of those strategies are lulling parents into deep passivity. Just not even being involved. There's lots of other important things to do. We have jobs, we have homeschooling, we have things to do, and maybe this will just not be an issue for our family. So he's trying to lull parents into deep passivity. He's paying special attention to destroying father-daughter relationships, because when girls don't have a good relationship with their dad, they're going to look for that relationship somewhere else, and it probably isn't going to be good. So dads, we need to be loving our daughters. Lead families to believe that sex is a taboo subject. You know, growing up in my house, we didn't really talk much about it. I had a couple conversations with my parents, but we need to be having conversations about that. I like this one. The enemy is leading church leaders to assume that parents are talking about it, and he's leading parents to think that the church leaders are talking about it, and nobody's talking about it. This is his strategy. Just don't talk about it. Along the same lines, he's trying to convince moms that it's the dad's jobs, and he's trying to convince the dads that it's the mom's jobs. It's both of our jobs. Here's another strategy. Create as much marriage conflict as possible around this issue. Make problems in marriages. Get kids to grow up early and lose their innocence as soon as possible. You know, you can hardly walk through a mall without walking by a store that is showing things that is taking away our kids' innocence on the billboards and in the windows of the mall. Convince young people that regarding the issues of sex, the world is very credible and their parents are clueless. So if you want to learn about sex, go online and do it. Talk to your friends about it. Look at your buddy's Instagram feed and see what it says. That's where I'm going to learn about sex, not from mom and dad. Saturate the world with sexual images. Mess up the sex lives of married couples. You know, married couples don't always want to talk about this. Hardly want to talk about this, I would say. Trick parents, this is the last one. Trick parents into thinking they have plenty of time to teach their children about sex, dating, and relationships. Our oldest has just moved out. She actually sent me a letter the other day. She mailed me a letter. We still do that. Well, she does anyways. I don't think I've mailed her a letter, but I'm about to. She was asking me, you know, Dad, can you give me some advice about finding a husband? I was like, oh, that is a great question to ask. I don't know if I have any advice, but I'm sure I can find something and give it to her. But our kids need to learn this from us. You are the best source for talking about these things with your children. I feel like I'm getting a sunburn on my back. I talked about the enemy's strategies. Oh, these are my parents from the 1990s again. So I had two conversations with my parents about sex that I recall. Number one, my mom had a book called, I'm going to show it at the end, it was called Who Made Me? And it was a little kind of picture book like the ones I showed you. It was a great book that... I remember two things from it. A picture of cartoony-looking naked parents in bed and picture of puzzle pieces. And basically those two things explained the birds and the bees to me with my mom's little book. It's a great book for little kids. The second conversation I had was with my dad, and I remember driving in his pickup truck. I was probably in fourth grade, I'm gonna say, and I had been wondering for a while, but I worked up the nerve to ask him, like, "Dad, what's sex?" And I don't remember what his answer was. I was too nervous to ask the question, but I imagine he just explained it to me, so I figured it out eventually. And then we learned about it in school. But one thing that the public school has on us is they are at least bringing up the subject and talking about it. Now, I'm not saying they're talking about it in a godly and pure and good way, but they are talking about it. And one of the stereotypes of homeschooling families is that we are overprotective of our kids. And that may be true sometimes, but we've got to bring these conversations up. And sometimes we don't want to bring them up because of the vileness, you know, that could come up as we're talking about these things. And we don't want our kids to lose their innocence. You know, that was, I'll tell you about a conversation with my 12-year-old boy that we had. And I was hesitant to talk about it. I was like, okay, and I even said it to my wife after our conversation. You know, I've just opened his eyes to something that, you know, he didn't know about before, and now he knows about it. And I felt a little bit sad about it. But I guess I shouldn't feel sad about it. But I didn't want him to lose his innocence. These are real questions in the last 4 months since January that my 10-year-old boy and my 12-year-old boy have asked me. So the first one, so we're studying Proverbs together, and we talked about a seductress. So they asked, one question was, "Dad, what's a seductress?" What is porn was a question that came up. Now, they saw these books lying around and stuff as I was preparing for these talks. So some of these questions came out of that, just not out of left field. What does the F word mean? I don't know where that came from, but that was a question. Why do people take bad pictures? And what's a stripper? So this is funny. So we live in Estevan, Saskatchewan, which is a coal mining town. And so one of the processes for coal mining is stripping. They strip the dirt off. So the men's hockey league in our town is called the Estevan Strippers. So I took my son to a city council meeting a few weeks ago. If you're in my culture talk, I mentioned that. I took him to a city council meeting. He's 12 years old. And the Estevan Strippers hockey tournament is coming up in a few weeks. So the mayor and the city councilors are making jokes and talking about the Estevan Strippers in the city council meeting. And two of the councilors go to our church. So they saw me walk in. They're like, "I saw you walk in with your son tonight, and I knew we were going to be talking about the Estevan Strippers." I'm sorry that we did that. I'm sorry that you came to this meeting. So as soon as the meeting was done, "Dad, what's a stripper?" So I said, "Son, strippers are people that take off their clothes for money." And he was like, "Oh, okay." Well, that was the end. Like, okay, we're going to just leave that one for now, son. More than 50% of parents have not had the talk about sex with their kids. And there's actually a statistic that they polled teenagers and they polled parents. And 90% of the parents said they had the talk with their kids. And 50% of the kids said they had the talk with their parents. So there's a disconnect between what we think is happening and what our kids think is happening. You can do it. You have influence. Do it scared. We've got to be really emphasizing that we are in this to help our kids win. And one of the scripts that came out of the book, one of the books here was, you know, tell our kids exactly this, like, "I love you enough to engage in these difficult conversations. You know, I'm going to be appropriately nosy in your life. I might, if your kids have phones, you might say, I'm going to ask you what you're looking at or have access to what you're looking at on your phone. I will ask difficult, invasive, honest, open questions. It's far too important to leave this up to chance." And say those exact words to your kids. And This is about not about making them afraid or making you afraid, but preventing and preparing them for what they need. The average age of exposure to pornography, this shocked me when I first saw it. For boys, it's age 7. Girls' first exposure is age 11. And typically, addiction to pornography starts in the teen years, even the early teen years, ages 12 to 14. It's funny, when I read this, I was shocked, like, oh, age 7. And then I thought about my own life. I was in grade 3 or grade 4 when I first saw pornography. How old are you in grade 3 or grade 4? You're probably 7 or 8 or 9, somewhere in that neighborhood. I was at a private Christian school. We were outside at recess, and we found a magazine behind the dumpster behind our school at recess, me and two of my friends. Now, the school was in a sketchy, it was in like an industrial area, so I don't think the magazine came from it. My uncle was one of the teachers at the school, and I told my sister about this. She's like, I thought you would be safe. You were with the pastor, and you were with our uncle, and you still saw pornography? You're like, I don't think it was connected to our pastor or the uncle, but anyways. It was at a private Christian school, and we found this magazine. And I still remember it. I can remember the pictures to this day of what I saw in that magazine. Lust blooms in the soil of disengagement. The main emphasis here today is that we need to just be engaging with our kids and talking about this with them. If you do nothing else than just have conversations and ask your kids questions, engage with them on it so that they are not hidden and they're not hiding things. We need to bring things into the light. If they see something, they need to tell us about it. And we need to ask, have you seen anything? And do you have any questions that you want to ask me about what you've seen? Out of a support group of online porn addicts, half of them said that they got addicted between ages 12 and 14. So the early teen years, again, I said this a minute ago, but the early teen years are so important to be getting these discussions out with our kids. Some other statistics, by the time they turn 19, 70% of teens have had oral sex. Most do not consider oral sex as real sex. Now, these are public school or they're teen numbers just in the general public. I would suspect it's less in the homeschooling community, but just generally, like talking about teenagers, 48%, about half of high school students have had sexual intercourse. So there is sexual activity happening, even if your kids are hanging around with other kids and being light. Just know that there are conversations happening potentially that you are not aware of that are going on in your kids' spheres of influence in their environment. If we're not having these conversations with our kids, you know, in one of the books he puts it like, if we're only talking about the bad things about sex, like don't have sex till you're married and don't look at pornography and don't do this and don't do this, he's like, it's trying to teach someone to cook, but all you ever talk about is like food poisoning. If you're only talking about all the bad things, you know, no one's going to become a good cook if all you ever talk about is if you cook food, you might get food poisoning. If you cook food, you might get food poisoning. If you cook food, you might get food poisoning. Talk about the good things and frame these sexual conversations in marriage. Sex is great. When you get married, it will be great. It will be a good thing. When I had the conversation with my 12-year-old a few weeks ago, he had a pretty disgusted look on his face as we were talking about this. Like, this is a good thing, son. This is a very good thing. Just encouraging them to know that sexuality is a gift from God. It is a good thing. God created it. You know, everything good in society, every one of us, every healthy, flourishing society has come about because of sex. It is a very good thing. God has made it as a tool, a great, enjoyable tool to create thriving societies and thriving homes and thriving churches and thriving communities. But the enemy wants to take this good thing that God has created and twist it. So Rob Reno says the three purposes of sexuality, number one is uniting the spirits of husband and wife, number two is for making babies, and number three is for pleasure. God has created this gift for three good things. But what the enemy has done is he has scratched off the first two things. The enemy's purpose is only creating sex for pleasure. And if that means it's looking at pornography and masturbating, then that is what the enemy wants our young men to do. If that means having some kind of relationship with a girl that is in your high school, that's what the enemy wants to do. If that's some other kind of, there's all kinds of perverted sexuality that we can't even imagine going on. If it brings you pleasure, that is the ultimate goal that the enemy is trying to get our young people to believe. And so we need to remind them that it is good in marriage with mom and dad, with your wife, for a mom and dad. See, it's even a little awkward talking about this in here. Ideally, dads, I would encourage you to have these conversations with your sons. And moms, I would encourage you to have the conversations with your daughters. Dads talk to the boys, moms talk to the girls. And when I'm talking to my boys, I find it easier when we're like doing something. We finished plowing the driveway and shoveling the driveway. It was back in January when I had this talk with my 12-year-old boy. I'm like, let's just go for a walk for a second. Walking shoulder to shoulder. Sometimes it's easier to have these conversations with our boys going for a little walk or working in the garage or outside somewhere. Sometimes looking face to face with your boys, that could be a little bit challenging for some of us. If that works for you, great, but I like the walk and talk method. So if that makes it easier for you dads, walk and talk. Apologize to them if you're making up for lost time. If they've seen it, pornography at age 7, and we haven't had this conversation with them, they're getting this first exposure, and there's something about the first exposure to something. If your parents bring you this conversation and the first exposure is from your parents, that is a much healthier way than if the first exposure is from your friend seeing something on his cell phone or seeing something on the internet. Bring this conversation up as the first person and ask them questions about it. Like, we traveled around for a little while and we stayed at some Airbnbs, and some of them had Netflix on the TVs. We don't even have a TV, but we don't have Netflix. And I was shocked just at like the scrolling screen, the home screen, whatever it is on Netflix. I guess it shows whatever the previous person. Like, we're sitting in the living room and this stuff is coming up on, like, I just couldn't believe it's just right there. And we're not looking for it. We're not watching it. It reinforced me that I'm glad we don't have a TV, because I just don't think it's worth it seeing some of the stuff that comes up there. We were created for intimacy and connection. And talking about pornography and sexual addiction, when I spoke with Caleb, who's the sexual addiction therapist, he said that some events in life, even that may seem like minor events, can lead young people to search out coping mechanisms like pornography. So I said, oh, like extreme things like a divorce? He's like, well, that's not an extreme thing. There's more extreme things than that. But he said even something like a mom going back to work when a boy is a teenager, he's like, that can trigger a boy looking for affection and looking for something because he has some hurt because his mom went back to work. And so he said there are small things like that, small relational things that can become the triggers that get our boys to go look for this, to get this need met somewhere else. There's healthy things that our boys can do to get these physical needs met. Wrestling with dad, wrestling. Like, there are physical needs and emotional needs that boys have. Physical things, shaking hands, hugging, wrestling with brothers, doing things like that that are healthy ways to get emotional connection and physical connection in the home and in the family. These are good things for our boys to have because they do have needs that they need to get met. Let's talk about some guidelines here for having the talk with your kids, talking about some of this. First of all, pray about it. That's a very good idea. And ask God to give us wisdom for it. Dad talked to sons, mom talked to daughters. I already said that. Practice it. So I knew my boy had asked me 3 times what the F word meant. So I knew one time the little kids were around, so I wasn't going to explain it. The second time I was working, so I didn't have time to explain it. And the third time I was like, okay, I'll tell you what the F word means. And so I had some time to think about what my answer was going to be before explaining it to him. And I actually was kind of walking around to say, okay, this is what I'm going to say. If you have to practice it, like with your wife or in front of the mirror or like sitting at Timmy's with your buddy and just practicing, if people walk by at Timmy's and you're practicing explaining that to your buddy, that could get awkward, but as a good dad, that might be something that helps you, is to practice explaining this. So doing a coming of age event. I was talking to a dad this weekend. I don't see him here. When his boys turn 13, he takes them on a little road trip and makes it like a rite of passage. In our society, we don't really have a rite of passage. Jewish people have like a bar mitzvah when their boys turn 13, I think. You know, jungle tribes, you have to like go out and kill a crocodile or something, and then if you come back, you're a man, and if you don't come back, I guess you're not a man. But through history, there have been rites of passage in society, and in our Western world, we have kind of abandoned that. So this dad I was talking to on Thursday here, he said he takes his sons, they do a little road trip. It's unique for each boy. One of them, I think, wanted to go mountain biking. One of them wanted to go to Ontario and visit family. And so he's got days to go to do this with his sons, and he talks about it. And he said, I explain mistakes that I've made in the past and talk about it with my sons and just get it out there and make it an event, make it something that remember, like, we left, you weren't a man, we come back, you are a man, and you know manly things. So making it some kind of coming of age event. Just start talking about it. Number five, just start talking about it. Number six, keep it age appropriate. You obviously, you are all wise and knowledgeable parents. You will do that. Use available resources. I mentioned some of those. Be positive about it. Again, paint sex and paint this whole area of sexuality in a positive light within marriage. Ask for a response. So here, I'll tell you what happened with my son here. So he'd been asking me what the F word was, and I'm like, okay, let's go for a little walk. I'll explain what the F word is. I said, do you know what sex is? That was my first question to him. He's like, isn't that if you're a man or a woman? And I was like, yes. Like, that is a great answer, son. It was like, you are still innocent. This is wonderful. I'm like, yes, it is if you are a man or a woman. And I said, do you know anything else? So I was asking him questions. I wanted to see what he knew and if what he didn't know anything. So that was fantastic. I was like, well, sex is when a man and a woman. I asked him, do you ever feel your penis get hard sometimes? Sometimes maybe if you wake up in the morning or you're on a car ride or something like that. He's like, yeah, I feel it. I go, great. He kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about, Dad? I'm like, well, so this is what happens, son. A man's penis gets hard and it goes into a woman's vagina and it shoots sperm into there and then she potentially can have a baby from that. And his eyes just... He didn't see it coming. And I was so grateful. I was so grateful that he was so clueless. And I explained it. But then I asked him, I'm like, do you have any more questions about it? He's like, nope. And I asked him, you know, have you ever seen anything or had an experience, you know, that raised more questions or anything? And he told me this story that shocked me. And it was from only a couple weeks earlier. We were at church, and I'm on the worship team, so I was playing drums, I think. And he had come to help with sound and help set up and stuff. There were three boys in church in the sound booth during a worship practice. One of the boys had a cell phone, and they were looking at his cell phone at church in the sound booth during a worship practice, and. They didn't see anything very bad, but they were watching some video and they were talking about cocks. And so he said to me, Dad, what's a cock? What are cocks? Like, he actually said, that's a rooster, right? I'm like, yes, son. A cock is a rooster. I said, no, well, cock is another word that might be used for penis. And he was like, what? The point of the story is they were at church in the sound booth. I'm like, guys, don't give your kids cell phones. There might be some debate on that, but I'm like, don't give your kids cell phones. The point was I asked him for a response. Do you have any other questions? Have you seen anything? Ask your kids for a response when you're talking about with them. Have you seen something on your friend's phone? Have you seen something on the internet? Did you see magazines aren't really much of a thing anymore, but maybe they've seen a magazine. Lots of these examples in these books talk about kids seeing magazines at their grandparents' houses or at their aunts and uncles' houses in the bathroom or they go in a closet and they find this stuff and they accidentally come upon it. I was in Saskatchewan at the homeschooling conference last month and a lady said her son was at the library And there is a book, her son, her 12-year-old son picked a book off the shelf in the children's section that had been wrongly stacked back on the shelf. Then he was able to check it. He didn't open it up, but he was able to check it out of the library. And that they even let him do that was amazing. And it was a homosexual, pornographic, like, comic book. And on the very first page was a picture. She didn't tell me what the picture was. She's like, my 12-year-old boy opens this book up thinking it's a comic book. It's, like, designed to appeal to kids. And sees this graphic sexual image on the first page. And she's like, he was shocked. I'm like, your poor son. So this is a... She was very angry. She met with her city councilor and the library management, and she's trying to figure out what happened here. But accidentally, our sons may come upon some of this stuff. So engaging and bringing up this topic is what we've got to do. I keep saying that over and over, but it is important. It's okay to be curious, but be safe. You know, if we go to the zoo, we look at the lions, but we don't get in the pen with the lions. And if your kids are showing a natural attraction to the opposite sex, that's a very good thing. We should be approving that and celebrating that in the healthy context of marriage and in the healthy context of a family. But that curiosity is good, and that honesty is good. So encouraging honesty and encouraging your kids to bring up these conversations is a good thing to do. Rules without relationship leads to rebellion. The number one factor that came across in all this research preparing for this was that having a healthy relationship with parents was the key indicator about whether children were getting addicted to pornography. Just having a healthy relationship at home is so powerful because it gives the emotional stability and the strength that they need that they are not going to be looking for these needs to be met elsewhere. So just having great relationships with your kids and not just making rules. Josh McDowell said, rules without relationship leads to rebellion. Not just saying, don't do this, don't do this. Have the relationship with your kids, encourage them, love them, and have these conversations. Who influences the teens most? This is an interesting statistic. 35% of kids in this poll responded that their parents have the most influence on them when it comes to sexual decisions. The second most influence was friends, and this surprised me. The third most influence was religious leaders. So just know your youth pastor has like hardly any influence on the decision making sexually that your kids are making. But you have huge, huge, huge influence on the decisions that your kids are making sexually. So engage with them, talk about that with them. I'm gonna try and play this little clip. This is an interview from our podcast we did with a dad of 11. And he's going to tell us about a little story to show the importance of dads engaging with their kids on this topic. Let's see. You can't see it, really, but you can hear it. And you can't hear it. All right. Well, that was fantastic. Thanks, Sean, for sharing that story with of your son. What he said in there was that his son, he was doing a Bible study with his boys, studying Proverbs together. I've been doing that with my boys as too. Proverbs brings up some fantastic topics to talk about with our kids. Proverbs 2, I think we were talking about, where the seductress came up. Sean tells the story in that video of his teenage son getting into a tempting situation and then fleeing from the situation. Because he said, Dad, I remember reading through Proverbs with you and my brothers, and it talked about fleeing from temptation. And when I got into that tempting situation, I ran away, I fled. That is our battle plan for our boys. Boys, if you see something or you're in a situation, flee. Don't scroll, don't flip, don't try to see more. Flee, run away, get away as fast as you can. That is the battle plan here. Let's talk about some ways that we can grow closer to our kids. Yesterday in my homeschooling dads and moms talk, I talked about empathy and relationships, and some dads have a hard time with understanding feelings and things like that. All of these things I think are a little bit challenging for dad. Five ways to grow closer to your kids, dads. Invest significant time with them. Quality time comes from quantity of time. If you're with your kids, these conversations will come up if you bring them up. Take an interest in their world. You know, in their small things, when your three-year-old boy wants to show you his rope that he has turned into some kind of a slingshot or a bow and arrow or something, take an interest, because if you're not going to take an interest in your boys and girls telling you about the little things that you might think are insignificant, do you think they're going to want to come and talk to you about things that are significant? Take an interest in those little things. This is hard for me to do, but I'm trying to get better. Offer sincere words of empathy. Empathy means understanding someone else's feelings. Sometimes hard for dads to do. If your son is telling you, talking about his feelings, he's feeling sad about something, don't try to fix him. Don't try to correct the situation. Just say, I hear that you're feeling sad, son. That's okay. And then use appropriate touch. Give them hugs. Give them kisses. The other Thursday when we left our house, I had my kids all around me in a circle, the 8 or 9 of them. I'm like, bye, love you. Kiss them, kiss them, kiss them, kiss them, kiss them, kiss them. Give your kids hugs and kisses. And hug and kiss your wife so your kids see positive signs of affection in your home. Hug and kiss your wife. So my dad would always come home and give my mom a great big kiss that sometimes was disgusting, but he did it, and I remember that to this day. So in one of the books, one of the authors said, my goal is to make my kids feel awkward or uncomfortable at least once a week. Now, my wife will sometimes like push me away, like, there's kids around here. It's like, don't do that. All right, now I've lost my train of thought. I see you over there, honey. All right, let's talk about if our kids messed up, if they make mistakes here. Guilt and condemnation around the issue of sexuality and pornography is very, very high. It is a high shame, high condemnation, high guilt kind of a thing. And I remember when I was in, I guess I was in high school, and I was struggling with lust and masturbation, and I wanted to talk to my best friend about it, and I was going to write him a note, but I was so ashamed of it, I didn't want him to recognize my handwriting in the note to say, hey, can you pray for me or whatever? So I cut like all the letters out of the newspaper and like I cut and then taped them onto a page like, please pray for me, I need help with lust or something like that. And then I folded it up, and we were both in like the youth band, and I put it in the back of his guitar amp, and we never talked about it. Like, he never knew it was me, and until probably it was after we were married, it was probably 10 years later, and I said, hey, do you remember in youth, did you ever find like a newspaper cutout letter in the back of your guitar amp? He's like, yeah, I found that. He's like, I never knew. I thought it was like Sally, this girl that always had problems in the youth group, that she wanted more prayer for stuff. I'm like, no, that was me. He's like, man, what was wrong with you? Give your head a shake, bro. But the shame around it is so huge, and the guilt. So is your kid going to say, if your boy sees pornography, is his reaction going to be, my parents are going to kill me, my dad's going to kill me? Is that what his response is when he sees pornography? Or is his response going to be, this is going to kill my parents, I really need to call my dad? That's the response that we want. Son, it's safe for you to talk to me about this. I'm going to reward you for your honesty. It is good to be honest. Proverbs talks about bringing things out into the light and the health of that. We need to encourage our kids to be honest. And when they come to us, don't get angry with them. But we want them to think, I need to call my dad. We want to be the guy that is on their list to call when they see this. Okay. If our kids mess up, how do we deal with it? This comes out of the Talks book that I mentioned earlier. Help them acknowledge that they blew it. And being authentic, like, son, I've blown it too. I've made mistakes. If you have made mistakes, if you're perfect, then you can't say that. If you've made mistakes, you don't have to go into the details, but son, I've made mistakes. I understand what you're going through. thank you for being honest with me, and let's work through this together. Talking about honesty, the other day, this happened in our house. I'm learning how to play bass. I just got a new bass guitar, and I went to pick it up. It's an acoustic bass, so it's a wooden body. And I went to pick it up, and it had a great big huge chip out of it. And I was like, I did not put this chip in the bass guitar. Who put the chip in the bass guitar? And in an angry dad kind of way, I was running around the house saying, who touched my guitar and where did the chip come from? And my 10-year-old boy says, oh, dad, it was me. And I was shocked that he just like said it right out of the bat. I was like, Justice, his name's Justice. I'm like, Justice, thank you so much for being honest with me. And then I called all the other kids. I'm like, everyone, come and see Justice. Justice made a mistake. And then I asked who made the mistake. And he honestly came to me and spoke about it. And I like praised Justice for being honest about what he had done and what he had seen. When our kids are honest with us, let's encourage it. Let's thank them for bringing it up and being honest about it. And then let's show them how to repent, how to have forgiveness from you. You forgive them. Let them know that God is forgiving them. There's no sin that they can do that God is not going to forgive them of. And there's no sin they can do that I, as a dad, am not going to forgive them of. I'm reading a book called Habits of the Household right now. And he talks about putting his kids to bed at night. One of the habits that he does is he looks them in the eye and he asks them this question. He's like, is there anything you can do that will make me love you any less? And he waits for their answer. No, there's nothing I can do that will make you love me less. Great. Is there anything you can do that will make me love you more? No, there's nothing I can do that will make me love you more. Even if you do something bad, I am going to love you. Our kids need to know that they're going to have complete forgiveness from us. We are going to love them no matter the bad things they do. We're going to love them no matter the good things they do. Position them to avoid future mistakes. So did they see something on their friend's phone? Did they see something on your family computer? Where is your family computer? Do your kids have screens in their rooms? Do your kids carry screens around with them? What can you put in their lives to position them to avoid future mistakes? Can you say, I'm going to have some kind of tracking mechanism? Where's Compass, right? So these guys have a booth here. Compass has a mobile like tracking platform for protecting what comes up on your phones and stuff. So at home, we have something called Circle by Disney. It is a Wi-Fi box that connects to prevent stuff from coming into your home. But the guys at the Compass booth were saying, well, what happens when you leave your home? Do you still have any kind of screening, filtering system on your devices? So if you see their booth out there, Compass has some things that will allow you to filter and screen devices, you know, wherever you go, not just within your home. So that's something that you might want to check out. It might be a thing to do to position your kids to avoid future mistakes. And then teach them to live in freedom. You know, bringing things to the light brings freedom. I sound like a broken record. I keep saying that, but just bringing it out and talking about it brings freedom. Okay, anonymous, affordable, and available. I already talked about this for a minute. We're going to read a Bible story. David and Tamar and Amnon. If you have your Bibles on your phones, or if you have your Bibles, this is in 2 Samuel 13, verses 6 to 15. 2 Samuel 13, 6 to 15. I'll give you a minute to look that up, and then I'm going to read it. This is a story that is full of red flags. So we're going to read this story, and I want you to think about the reference is 2 Samuel 13, verses 6 to 15. Fathers, I want you to pay close attention to this story because one of the red flags has to do with the father here. There are red flags in this story that a wise father would have picked up on before this situation happened. 2 Samuel 13, verse 6 to 15. This is about Amnon, who is one of David's sons, and Tamar is his sister. So Amnon lay down and pretended to be ill. When the king came to see him, the king is his father, Amnon said to him, I would like my sister Tamar to come and make some special bread in my sight so I may eat from her hand. David sent word to Tamar, his daughter, at the palace. Go to the house of your brother Amnon and prepare some food for him. So Tamar went to the house of her brother Amnon, who was lying down. She took some dough, kneaded it, and made the bread in his sight and baked it. Then she took the pan and served him the bread, but he refused to eat. I'm going to just pause here for a second, give you a little bit of backstory. So Amnon had already been talking with friends of his that he wanted to have sex with his sister. So this is a little bit of the pre-story here before we jumped in. Whether David knew about that or not, I don't know. Send everyone out of here, Amnon said. So everyone left him. So they were alone. Then Amnon said to Tamar, bring the food here into my bedroom so I may eat from your hand. And Tamar took the bread she had prepared and brought it to her brother Amnon in his bedroom. But when she took it to him to eat, he grabbed her and said, come to bed with me, my sister. No, my brother, she said to him, don't force me. Such a thing should not be done in Israel. Don't do this wicked thing. What about me? Where could I get rid of my disgrace? What about you? You'd be like one of the wicked fools in Israel. But he refused to listen to her, and since he was stronger than she, he raped her. Then Amnon hated her with intense hatred. In fact, he hated her more than he had loved her. Amnon said to her, get up and get out. What were some of the red flags in that story? I'm looking for answers here. What were some of the red flags? He's lying down. Yes.
Spending time alone.
Yes.
David didn't ask why he wanted to.
David, the father, totally blew this. He totally blew this. There were, so first of all, he didn't know, maybe he did. I'm assuming he didn't. Let's assume he didn't know that this is what Amnon wanted. So was he engaged with his son? Did he know what was going on in his son's life? Did he know who his son's friends were and what his son was talking to his friends with? Because this was no surprise to Amnon and his friends that this is what he wanted to do. The father dropped the ball big time here. Dads, don't drop the ball. Get engaged with your kids. Get engaged with your sons. Ask them questions. Ask them what they're looking at. Ask them what they're seeing. Ask them what they're talking about with their friends. Don't drop the ball. Amnon was alone. He said one thing and did another. He said, I want the bread. I don't want the bread. So are your kids saying one thing and doing another? Are they lying? Does it seem like they're hiding something? Are they changing their minds? Are they, you know, oh, I didn't see this on the phone. I did see this on the phone. Billy doesn't have a phone. Billy does have a phone. What kinds of clues are there about what our kids are doing? So the dad being engaged was the huge red flag in that story. Some things that we can do to help our sons confront this. Is anyone here a scuba diver? Is there anyone in Manitoba who's a scuba diver? Oh, I don't know. Are you really? Oh, great. Where do you go scuba diving? Dominican. Oh, that's great. That's great. In one of these books, he talks about what guys that dive, people that dive with sharks are taught what to do if a shark approaches them. And I actually was watching some shark videos last night, and I saw it in real life. What are you supposed to do when a shark approaches you? Do you know? Do you dive with sharks? Correct. You turn around and you face the shark. Sharks are not used to having anything face them. And so divers that dive with sharks, this was an interview with the guy who films for Shark Week. So like he makes a living diving with sharks. I don't get that, but that's what he does. He makes a living diving with sharks. He said, what you do if a shark is attacking around is you turn and you face it and you even hit it in the nose if necessary. Sharks are not used to having anything face them and anything be aggressive towards them. Most things run away from sharks. That's probably what I would do. I would swim away from the shark. Moral of the story is we need to get our boys to face. We need to face this thing with our sons. Don't run away from it. Don't try to avoid it. Don't put it off because it's awkward and uncomfortable and difficult. Face the shark. Face the issues of pornography and sexuality. Talk about them. Be the one that is taking the initiative on it, not reacting to it when it happens to happen. Dr. Rob Reiner said, he said, if I'm honest, I would honestly rather have my kids fail in school than fail in sexuality. I would rather have my kids addicted to cigarettes than addicted to pornography. The costs and the expense of these sexual issues is so long-lasting and so far-reaching and so important. It's so important that we are talking with our kids about this. So there was, this is not a real statistic, but it came up in a few of these resources that he said, 85% of boys struggle with, 85% of teenage boys struggle with lust and masturbation. The other 15% struggle with lying. He said, in youth ministry, he said, I've done surveys like on a scale of 1 out of 10, how do you rate your struggle with lust with teen boys? And they're always coming back like 8, 9, 10. And he says, do you think your struggle with lust is worse than everyone else? And he says, they always come back as a 10. Like, I think my struggle with lust is worse than the other boys' struggle with lust. The fact is that our boys need us to be having these conversations with them from a healthy dad's perspective and not from their friends. Their friends don't know anything. Let's just tell them that. Boys, I know very much, and your friends don't know anything. So don't ask your friends about this. Come to me, and I'm willing to talk about it. You can ask me anything, but your friends do not know anything. I know things. They do not know anything. Going back to the guilt and shame part of things, it's all part of a cycle. All these counselors and all these resources talk about this loop and this cycle of lust and then release and looking at pornography and all that. The first step in the loop is sexual desire. Someone calls it pre-lust. This is a healthy thing. We have children because of this first step. There's healthy sexual desire, so that is good. But what you do with that is where the problems can occur. If you are a teenage boy and you embrace that desire by looking at pornography and masturbating, that is an unhealthy way to deal with the desire. A healthy way is to talk about it with your dad, talk about it with your accountability group, talk about it with someone. Bring it out and discuss it, and don't embrace that desire. When you get married and there's a healthy way to embrace that desire, go for it. Because what happens is if they embrace it, there's a drive to get more. And Bonnie did a session yesterday, and she talked about neuroplasticity. Was anyone in that? And neuroplasticity is the ruts and the lines in our brain that form when we do things and when we get pleasure. So if boys are looking at pornography and masturbating and building these pleasure roots in their head, it is literally creating pathways in their head. Those pathways can be fixed and can be refilled in a healthy way, but that's what's happening in this loop, is they're getting this, these paths are getting deeper and deeper and deeper and building, and that is where the addiction comes from. Physically, there are paths being built, and it creates the addictive cycle, which leads to guilt, 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 which makes them look for a way to get rid of the guilt and to feel good, which goes back to the beginning that they want to have a good feeling, and the cycle continues over and over and over and over. We want to stop this cycle and help our kids break out of it. How do we do that? There's hope and healing. So when I was talking to Caleb, the sexual addiction therapist, he said, you know, with the right counseling and the right support from family and parents and friends, boys can become free of this stuff. And it could be as little as 3 months. It could be up to a year or 2 years. He's like, but those ruts in their heads can be refilled. Like if you have a rut in your back path in your field and you don't drive on it for a while, dirt will blow into it, weeds will go in it. Those ruts can be refilled. Not only can they be refilled, but you can build new healthy pathways in their brain by giving rewards for good things and building new paths and new ruts in their brain. So there is hope and there is healing if they are in this situation. The talking cure, just talking about it, that makes a difference. Talking about it with your sons, bringing it up, asking for honesty, bringing up the subject, talking about it. In family, in community, in friendships, that support system is what will help our sons get through this. And you, mom and dad, are a key to this support system. And if you can get through to your sons before they are addicted to this, then that is even better and fantastic. We are at like out of time here. I talked about the enemy's strategy at the beginning, that he is wanting to ruin marriages, ruin our kids' innocence, get them exposed to this stuff as soon as possible. You are on the front lines to prevent the enemy from doing that. So what is your strategy? What are you doing to encourage your kids, encourage your boys to be honest, to keep their minds pure, to keep their eyes pure? Let's combat the enemy's strategy with good things. On my website, if you go to heydads.ca, I've got a list of all these resources and links where you can get them, and links to the website of all the pornography resources that I talked about today. Heydads.ca is where you can find that. Thank you so much for coming to this presentation. I hope you leave with the confidence to bring these conversations up. If you forget everything else, go have these conversations with your children. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for investing in your kids. Have a great weekend. Are there any questions or any advice or ideas that other parents have had? Hello. So the question is, what are good rewards that you can build to help kind of counteract the bad ruts that have been put in your kid's head, correct? Well, I think just the verbal affirmation from dad is a huge reward, to be speaking positive words from them when they bring this stuff, not to bring shame, not to bring guilt. So just positively affirming them and praising them. Another reward is just healthy physical affection. Hugs and kisses and showing your kids affection. There are, like, in the study of habits and things like that, like having actual rewards, like if your son is constantly looking at pornography, well, can you set up actual rewards like you don't do it for a week or a month or 3 months and start to track that and give reward? It could be money. It could be something that's creating a positive reward, like an actual reward for getting free of that stuff. So those are some ideas. Anyone have other ideas of what are good rewards you can give to your kids? Yo. Okay. Great. Yes, Karsten.
I think there's a lot of wisdom in scripture, repenting of your sin.
Yes. Yes.
Likely many of us have struggled with this issue ourselves, and it's just encouraging to see that God can heal you from that.
Yes.
And take that totally away.
So Karsten said repenting and getting freedom just through forgiveness and repentance and confession. You know, confession is something that isn't very common these days, you know, and in some of the support groups and things that I read about here, in addiction support, telling your story of freedom helps to bring freedom to other people. So if there are examples you can give to your sons of things that you've got free from. But yeah, repenting and turning, bringing things to the light, asking for forgiveness. Great. Jake.
So you mentioned neuroplasticity and rebuilding the pathways. Conquer series.
Yes.
Can you explain that beautifully?
Conquer series. My dad mentioned that to me too. Conquer series is it's like a small group study. There's a website. If you look up the Conquer series, they have more things about building those reward paths and rebuilding those ruts in the brain. Yes. It is. It is. The number is 30%. So 30% of women struggle with pornography. So she just said, let's not, even though the focus today, I talked a lot about boys, this impacts and affects girls too. And the numbers say 30% of girls are addicted to pornography. So yes, it is a boys and girls issues. Yes, sir. Covenant Eyes. Yes. So he said another app and website is Covenant Eyes. That's in my resource guide that I've got on my website. Another one is called Triple X Church, like XXX Church. And they have different software for accountability. He was saying you can do this with a group. I did this for a little while with some friends of mine where you'd get, every week I'd get like a email update of, you know, my friend had gone to these websites or whatever. So it's a group kind of accountability thing. Covenant Eyes and XXXChurch.com are two other resources. Yes, sir.
What was your definition of the F word?
Oh, I didn't finish that story. Well, I asked him if he knew what sex was, and I said, and then we talked about what sex was, and I said, the F word is a crass and just a harsh word for another word for sex. So that's where that conversation went. Yes, that's what I told him. I think that's what isn't that what it means? Yeah. Okay. It is. Good. Yes, I did. I just explained what sex was, and I said the F word is a not very nice way of saying that. Yes, sir.
You're talking about pornography and bad pictures. In some of the studies that I've been doing, especially related in church, in the church people, a lot of emphasis is put on pornography and bad pictures. Very little about bad literature for girls that really stimulates their desire for what boys would be more of a visual,
sure.
Girls is more of a
emotional or intellectual, or yeah. They're wired differently.
In the church that I came from, we're actually encouraged to read Jeanette Oak, which is one of our pastors, says it's the worst pornography.
Okay, so he was just talking about girls again, and he was saying some of the Christian romance type novels are creating, if we were to say pornography impacts boys, you know, physically and mentally, some of the emotional relationship and romantic kind of literature and writing impacts our girls in a similar way. And he said he couldn't put a Playboy magazine in his church library, but lots of the church libraries have these romance books for girls that are, we talk to our girls about, like, and our kids, don't awaken love before it's time. I'm botching that quote, but don't awaken love. And the Proverbs talks about that, and Ecclesiastes and Song of Solomon talk about all that. And some of these Christian romance novels are arousing those desires in our daughters. So, great. Thank you. Good point. I haven't read any of those, so I can't really speak to that. Great. Well, be encouraged. You're great parents. You don't have perfect families. None of us do. Just keep doing what you're doing. Loving your kids. Being intentional. You've got what it takes. Keep it up.